So I'll just read this prose verse and then we'll go on to the word by word synonyms. This is about the moon, of course. Evam Chandra Marga Gosta Dipya Pari Uparishtal Laksha Yojanata Upalabhya Manur Kasha Samvatsara Bhuktim Vakshabhyam Asa Bhuktim Sapadarkshabhyam Dine Noiva Paksha Bhuktim Agrachari Drutatara Gamano Bhunte. Evam Thus Chandrama The Moon Arka Gustavyaha Gavastibyaha from the rays of the sunshine. Aparishtat above. Laksha Yojanataha. By a measurement of 100,000 yojanas. Upalabhyamanaha. Being situated. Arkasha. Of the sun globe. Samvatsara Bhuktim. The passage of 1 year of enjoyment. Pakshabhyam. By 2 fortnights. Amasa Bhuktim. The passage of 1 month. Sapada Rikshabhyam. By 2 1/4 days. Dinena. By a day. Eva. Only. Pakshabhuktim. The passage of 1 fortnight. Agrachari. Moving impetuously. Drutatara Gamanaha. Passing more speedily. Bhunte. Passes through. So translation. Above the rays of the sunshine by a distance of 100,000 yojanas, which is 800,000 miles, is the moon, which travels at a speed faster than that of the sun. In 2 lunar fortnights, the moon travels through the equivalent of a samvatsara of the sun. In 2 1/4 days, it passes through a month of the sun, and in 1 day, it passes through a fortnight of the sun. So purport by His Divine Grace, Srila Prabhupada, Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. When we take into account that the moon is 100,000 yojanas or 800,000 miles above the rays of the sunshine, it is very surprising that the modern excursions to the moon could be possible. Since the moon is so distant, how space vehicles could go there is a doubtful mystery. Modern scientific calculations are subject to one change after another, and therefore they are uncertain. We have to accept the calculations of the Vedic literature. These Vedic calculations are steady. The astronomical calculations made long ago and recorded in the Vedic literature are correct even now. Whether the Vedic calculations or modern ones are better may remain a mystery for others, but as far as we are concerned, we accept the Vedic calculations to be correct. So, I guess we should comment on this. Stomagana Timidandesha Gananjana Shlakaya Tuksura Miditam Genitasmai Sri Gurveena Maha. So this is one of the difficult verses to comment on. So we'll try our best by the grace of His Divine Grace of the Prabhupada. Prabhupada mentioned two types of speculation. There's mental speculation and intellectual or intelligent speculation. So this is very interesting. So generally, when we joined the movement, we were taught that mental speculation is not good. And intelligent speculation course, after some time, we were taught that intelligent speculation is good or is useful in Krishna consciousness. So I'm going to describe the difference. Mental speculation basically means that you look at something and say, maybe it's true, maybe it's not true. Something in the Vedic literatures. So it means that you have some doubts. And of course, Krishna in the Gita, he says, Sharanana Purusha Dharma Shasha Parantapa Aprapyamam Nivartante Ritu Samsara Vartani. That's from the 9th chapter of the Gita, which we've been reading on Sunday. We didn't read, we started. Well, we didn't even start. Anyway, we tried to start on Sunday. So this verse is very interesting. It says, Sharanana Purusha, for the person who is ashrada, who does not have that, who has that, who doesn't have faith. It's a negative definition of doubt. A doubting person is someone who doesn't have faith. Sharana purusha, dharma shasha parantapa. In this dharma, which is basically the Vedic literatures, and we're talking about Sanatana dharma, parantapa means almighty arm. One, that's reference to, of course, Arjuna. Aprapyamam. Aprapya is also a negative word. It does not obtain. Like prapya means to take. And aprapya means not to take. Aprapyamam, of course, mam, is a personal pronoun referring to Krishna. Aprapyamam nivartante does not achieve. But mrityu samsara vartmani. Mrityu means death. Samsara is like the wheel. This literal definition of the word samsara is wheel. And of course, it's the wheel of birth and death, is a reference to. And actually, in the Buddhist tradition, they depict samsara as a wheel. They also have prayer wheels by which they can chant their japa very easily without having to chant it. You understand? They have the written prayers of the japa or the mantras, and they just spin them. So I'd like to do that too. That way I can chant easily 192 rounds a day, just like that. That's the Buddhist. Anyway, so getting back to the point, aprapyamam nivartante mrityu samsara vartani. And other places in the Gita, Krishna says, for the doubting soul, there's happiness neither in this world nor the next. Because basically, because one is always in anxiety. So mental speculation is something like that. You know, you read something and say, well, maybe true, maybe not true. And when you engage in mental speculation, there's no limit to what you can have doubts in. That's the problem. Like if you read some verse here and you say, well, maybe it's not true, then later on you can get to another verse where it says, you know, Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and you say, well, maybe that's not true either. Maybe the Supreme Brahman, the Brahma Jyoti, is actually the goal of human life, or the goal of life. So in other words, one doubt leads to another doubt. You know, if you actually doubt one particular thing, then this makes it very difficult. Therefore, we have something called philosophical speculation or intellectual speculation, both words being the same thing, which is you accept what it says here, and then you try to understand how to deal with it so it's true, but also so it doesn't contradict your, you know, observable phenomena. I mean, for example, the distance of the Earth to the Moon can be calculated even by you. I don't know if you knew that. It's not that hard. What you do is you do something called triangulation. I don't know if you know what triangulation is. You know. Anyway, just to tell you what triangulation is, when you study trigonometry in school, you learn how to calculate based upon if you can find the distance between two points and then and then the angles to a third point, then you can actually calculate how long something is, the length of something. In other words, I mean, just to put it in reference to the moon, let's say we're here and we have someone else, let's say in Los Angeles, and we say, you know, just measure the angle that the moon is to you. We know the distance between here and Los Angeles, at least a straight, we do a straight line, because not that we should actually do it along the curve, but there's ways to do that. And then you just understand, you know, how big the sides of the triangle are. That's called triangulation. And you can add to the same spot on the moon, of course, not just the moon itself, but you've got to pick a particular spot, like the eye of the man on the moon. You say, or focus on, you know, whatever aspect of the moon you're going to talk about. It's actually easier if it's if it's almost a new moon and there's just a sliver, because you can actually focus on part of the sliver. So anyway, you can triangulate. So, you know, what do you do about that? You know, A squared, B squared, C squared, you know, that's, of course, that's Pythagorean theory, but you use that in triangulation too. So, and how, what do you do with this? So, of course, our godbrother, Zataputta, is very nicely, you know, I've mentioned him a number of times in class, he's very nicely been able to reconcile what these verses say with observable phenomena. And he talks about, as I mentioned before, the ecliptic. We mentioned that yesterday. The ecliptic is the plane in which the sun travels around the earth, going through the different mansions. Mansions means the houses. There are lunar mansions and solar mansions. So, in other words, he's been able to explain how observable phenomena doesn't contradict what's being said here. And then also you have the explanation that, you know, that modern excursions to the moon are not possible, you know, at least the statements by Prabhupada. And so how do you reconcile that one when, what do they say, one small step for mankind is whatever. I don't even remember the statement. You had these astronauts going there. Well, another explanation of that is that the moon, to actually enter into the atmosphere of the moon, you have to have a specific type of body. I mean, there's more subtle things going on there. They're actually, it's a heavenly planet. I guess that's why in Christian theology they talk about heaven being up there. Actually, that's from Greek mythology. Because in Greek mythology they talk about Hades, you know. Isn't it like some subterranean realm where there's sort of like a three-headed dog. I forget the dog's name.
Charybdis.
What? Charybdis, yeah. And there's a river, and of course that's very similar to the Vaikarani River that's described in the Vedic literatures too. Anyway, and all the souls go to this Hades and they're just floating around there. And then even you have some heroes in the Greek mythology. Was that Jason who went down there? Yeah. He went down there and he tried to rescue some people. So there's this understanding that, you know, hell is down there if you dig down. Of course you get to Australia or something. I joke with the people in Australia that, how do you deal with being upside down all the time? Of course, they're not. Because I don't even want to say because of gravity, because later on gravity is sort of dissed in this particular chapter, the next chapter of Bhagavad Gita. It's not actually because of gravity, it's because of the winds which create the effect of gravity, the subtle winds. And that's a topic that's going to be dealt with in the next chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, which is really interesting. And the scientists are actually discovering that now too. They're talking about the vibrating strings, which is like the subtle winds, which cause gravity. So actually, when the scientists really become expert, they'll find out that their theories, I mean, not their theories, but what they're discovering is very much in line with what the Bhagavatam is saying. It's really interesting. And even Zataputta has gone through the different distances measured here, and he's mapped them on the cosmological map, and it's shown that the distances are actually quite accurate. So it's amazing. And these books were written, or at least composed, you know, 5,000 years ago. You can't say it was written; it was composed. Bhagavatam was composed, or put together by Srila Vyasadeva. Vyasa means he divided the four Vedic literatures. Divided the one Vedic literature into four. So this is called philosophical speculation or intellectual speculation, in which you understand something to be true and you reconcile it, which Prabhupada recommended. So those who are intelligent will have faith in the Vedic literatures and try to understand how these descriptions fit into observable phenomena. So it's interesting, I've been studying Christianity recently, and they also have a problem with this, with reconciling certain things, let's say in the Old Testament versus the New Testament. There's one interesting Christian group, and I forget the name of the group right now, there's so many different Christian groups. They surmise, based upon their reading of the Old Testament, they speculate, it's mental speculation, that the God of the Jews was a different God from the God of the Christians. You know, they said there's actually two gods. And this is really an anti-Semitic cult, Christian cult. I mean, some Christian cults are pretty anti-Semitic because they do blame the Jews for killing Jesus Christ. Of course, the person that they follow the most, even more than Jesus Christ, is Paul, who was a Jew, not only a Jew, but he was a rabbi, this is kind of funny. It's kind of contradiction. So talking about how they dealt with this particular issue, it's quite interesting, at least for me, it's not interesting for you. But, so what they discovered with the God of the Jewish people was that, you know, he's a mean person. You know, angry, vengeful, right? And there's one story that really irks them. And that's the story of the fall of Jericho. For those of you who don't know what that is, there was the Canaanites, they were living in the city of Jericho, and God said to Joshua, that you should conquer them, and then after you conquer them, they had a big wall around the city. After you conquer them, you should kill every man, woman, child in the city. So they had a big wall, so they went around the wall. They had a kirtan. That's sort of the first Harinam. So they had a Harinam. I don't know if it was a Harinam, anyway. And then they blew their shofars, which is like our conch shell, but it's a ram's horn. Instead of a conch shell. I guess ram's horn is not as pure as a conch shell. Because it says that the bones of animals are actually impure, but the conch is considered pure. It's like stool is considered impure, but the cow manure is considered pure. So we follow the Vedic literatures. Anyway, so they blew the ram's horns after they'd gone around. I think seven times, right? Seven times. Boop, boop, boop. Seven times, yeah. They went around seven times. And the walls came crumbling down. You know, there's a whole song about that. Just went to town of Jericho, and the walls came crumbling down. Anyone ever heard that song? That song is an interesting song. And I learned it when I was in Hebrew school. And we're very proud, you know, how that our people, you know, chosen people, you know, I was one of the chosen people. It's interesting. Anyway, there's some Jewish thing there. And very proud of it happened and how and in the Bible it says that every man, woman, and child was killed. Now, how do you reconcile that? And then, anyway, then you have Jesus Christ, who is basically forgiving prostitutes. You know, the prostitute is condemned, and there's a whole bunch of men around there just getting ready with their stones to stone her to death. And Jesus Christ says, you know, if any of you is without sin, let him throw the first stone. Of course, that's very similar to Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur when he was trying to establish the samadhi of Gaurakishore Das Babaji Maharaj. And he said, you know, if any of you have not had illicit sex the last month, not have the last fortnight, not the last 3 days, you can take the body. And all the people walked away. So in the same way, it's interesting that there must have been a lot of hypocrites there. They were getting ready to stone the lady. One thing about the Bible was interesting, because the biblical injunction is you're supposed to stone a man too at the same time. But what happened with the man? Anyway, but that's another issue. So they were, and so he said, those who were without sin, anyone without sin, he can throw the first stone, and everyone walked away. So, you know, Lord Jesus was extremely merciful. You know, if someone hits you on one cheek, what do? You turn the other cheek. And then you contrast that with the God in the Old Testament. And he's always angry, you know, for his people, promised people. He's drowning all these Egyptians in the sea. And you know, wow. So they developed it, one group developed this theory that there's two gods. And the Christian God is a lot better than the Jewish God. You know, he's the old God, and now we want the new God. It's interesting. So that's mental speculation. The point I'm making is that's mental speculation. So the question is, how would I deal with that particular contradiction? Well, I'm not really equipped to say what stories in the Bible are bona fide, what stories are not, or what God actually said, because the Bible was not passed down through an unbroken chain of discussion, neither the Old Testament nor the New Testament. And just like with many of the Vedic literatures that devotees are very fond of quoting nowadays, these literatures have not been passed down through the disciplic succession. So you have acharyas like Shripad Madhvacharya stating that, for example, the Mahabharata has been changed dramatically. He said there's been things taken out, things put in, and things changed. And even modern scholars, they've attempted to ascertain what is the critical edition of the Mahabharata. There's actually 85 different editions in the Mahabharata. 80-something editions. And a number of years ago, maybe 100 years ago, the scholars met, you know, they tried to ascertain what was the critical, you know, the actual original Mahabharata, and they weren't able to do it. In the same way, the same thing has happened with the Bible, too, which is interesting. The Old and New Testament. They're not really able to understand, you know, who wrote what. In fact, the general understanding among scholars is that the Gospels were not actually written by the people that they were attributed to. They're just not written by these people because of the time frame when they were written, and also that many of them were illiterate, and certainly they didn't write in Greek. They couldn't even write. You know, the fishermen couldn't even write. So, anyway, so the point is, when you have a scripture that has definitely been changed, you don't quote that or derive a philosophy with the same sort of surety that you would with the Bhagavatam. Because the Bhagavatam has been passed down to simple succession, with commentaries by great acharyas, Madhvacharya, Shivakti Sananta Saraswati Thakur, etc. So we don't have any doubts about the words of the Bhagavatam. So therefore, with the Bhagavatam, we engage in philosophical speculation to understand how it's true based upon the actual knowledge given, and also so it doesn't contradict observable phenomena in this world. So I think that's an extremely important point in what's called hermeneutics, understanding and interpreting scripture. So getting back to the point, another point that I made just a few minutes ago was that devotees sometimes are quoting from scriptures that may or may not be in their original form or bona fide or whatever. And a lot of things, a lot of weirdness comes out in our movement too. A lot, you know, there's a lot of things that people quote from that almost sometimes even indicate like a karma kanja. Even if they are bona fide scriptures, well, bona fide renditions of the scriptures, they encourage people in karmakanja consciousness. Like there was one book published about Ekadashi that encouraged people, you know, if you follow this Ekadashi, then you get this material benediction or that material benediction. But really the point of Ekadashi, as Srila Prabhupada pointed out, was that it's a positive thing. Prabhupada really didn't harp on, you know, the thing about the Papa Purusha. We mentioned that, you know, the Papa Purusha means the person of sin. Purusha sometimes means male, sometimes means person. So it's the person of sin. But Prabhupada never even mentioned that. You know, the Papa Purushas and grains, or as I mentioned, someone told me a funny story the other day that, you know, why can we eat peanuts? Because the Papa Purusha can't go through the soil. The peanuts are under the soil. You know, because I said, you know, I made this point to this person. I said, he's actually our deity worship minister. And I said, peanuts are also a legume. They're actually the same thing as a bean. The same exact family. I mean, it's just scientifically. And I said, why are we allowed to eat peanuts? And he said, well, because peanuts are below the soil, and the Papa Purusha somehow or other gets stuck, you know, and can't enter into the soil. I said, well, that's nice. I should live underground then. If I live underground, the Papa Purusha will never be able to touch me. I'll always be Krishna conscious. I don't have to follow Ekadashi because I can keep all my grains underground. You know, and eat spaghetti and pizza, because I don't eat that. But anyway, eat all these things on Ekadashi. So, but I'm sure he was quoting from some Shastra when he said that. And so people come up with just like all these amazing things and amazing rituals people have and superstitions people have. Especially devotees spend time in India, they come up with all these superstitions like snapping their fingers every time they yawn. And it's just like, huh? I mean, I just wondered if I've entered into the Middle Ages again sometimes. So the point I'm making is that basically, we should concentrate on the books from our acharyas, the books our acharyas have presented. Otherwise, you get very, very confused. Vedeshu Durlavam. It's very difficult to come to a conclusion to understand Krishna. Durlavam Atmapato. Simply by reading the various, even if you have bona fide versions of the Vedic literatures. I mean, some of the points are metaphorical. Some of the points have been changed, as I said before. Some of the points are not meant for you. Some of the points are just meant to scare the bejesus out of you. Of course, they don't use that word in the scriptures because they didn't know it. But basically, we should stick with our acharyas. You know, specifically with Srila Prabhupada and with the predecessor acharyas in our disciplic succession. And even sometimes we have to be careful about that because we're talking about the Brahma Madhva Gaudiya Sampradaya. But if you go to Sripad Madhvacharya, you'll find some differences in understanding from what Madhvacharya taught to what Chaitanya Mahaprabhu taught. So which is interesting because Madhvacharya is a pure devotee. He's Vayuputra, which means the son of Vayu. But still, you know, there's a different slant on the philosophy. And the followers of Madhvacharya, they're called Tattvavadis. And Chaitanya Mahaprabhu actually went to met with the Tattvavadis and had some discussion, of course, defeated the Tattvavadis. So even with our disciplic succession, I think we can go as far back as, you know, Madhavendra Puri. But there's actually a whole, let's say, presentation in our disciplic succession that occurred beginning with Madhavendra Puri, who Lord Chaitanya considered to be like the main trunk of devotional service or something like that, or the fountain of devotional service in our sampradaya. And in fact, when Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu would meet someone who was exhibiting ecstatic love of God, he would say to them, I understand you have a connection with Madhavendra Puri. So even within our disciplic succession, it's not that what they were saying before was wrong, but there's different slants on the philosophy or practices. Let's say the practices. And then even so, let's say even as far as practices are concerned, we go with this divine grace of the Prabhupada, who was adjusted, not the philosophy, not the Siddhanta. Siddhanta means conclusion, perfect conclusion, actually. But Srila Prabhupada has adjusted the practice of Krishna consciousness for us. Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur, he said that anyone who's not chanted 64 rounds is fallen. And I was just reading the Chaitanya Charitamrita, or the Chaitanya Bhagavat, sorry, where Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said to a group of Brahmins, he said, I will only eat in someone's house if he's a Brahmin of 100,000. So the Brahmins naturally thought he was referring to money. And they thought, well, no, Lord Chaitanya's not going to eat in any one of our houses because, you know, we're just poor Brahmins. I mean, who has 100,000 rupees? You know, very few people, lack of rupees. So Lord Chaitanya said, no, don't worry. I was talking about 100,000 names of God every day. I'll only eat. In other words, Lord Chaitanya said, I will only eat in the houses of people who chant, you know, roughly 64 rounds a day. That was Lord Chaitanya's vow, basically. I'm only going to eat in those houses. So, and then Prabhupada said, according to that calculation, Srila Bhakti Sananta Saraswati Thakur's calculation, we're all fallen. Because very few of us are chanting 64 rounds a day. But also Bhakti Sananta Saraswati Thakur made an allowance for those who preach Krishna consciousness. He said, those who stay back in the temple all day long should chant 64 rounds. Of course, I understand those doing pujari work, they're working all day long. But he was referring to those who just simply sit back and eat prasadam. I mean, obviously, if one's engaged full-time in service, that's part of the preaching mission. But, so Prabhupada, even as far as the application, Prabhupada adjusted things according to time, place, and circumstance. So it's really important to connect to the Sampradaya through the present-day representative, who is Srila Prabhupada of the Sampradaya. Otherwise, even you can get confused if you go back and you think, I have to chant 64 rounds a day according to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Or, I mean, you hear some of the instructions of Gorgashodas Babaji Maharaj, you know, people get married, they have to live separately, and the wife's not even allowed to cook for the husband. I mean, you got all these heavy things that Gorgashodas Babaji Maharaj said. So we approach the Sampradaya through His Divine Grace through the Prabhupada, and that way we can actually execute devotion. Not those differences in Siddhanta, but there's differences in practice. And Prabhupada even said, even as far as his instructions, he says, what is applicable in India may not be applicable in the Western world. He says that in the Chaitanya Charitamrita. An Acharya is expert in the application of Krishna consciousness. So certain things Prabhupada did in India, he would do differently in the Western world. However, in India, he did have women preach. Here's a political message for you. You know, some people say, I don't want to say they're chauvinists. I mean, that's interesting. It's like, I'm not stealing. I mean, but some people say that, you know, in India, women should not preach or do deity worship, but Prabhupada did it. So it's good enough for Prabhupada, it's also good enough for us, isn't it? So yes, there is application, difference in application, but don't be more intelligent than Prabhupada as far as the difference in application. You know, don't think you can be, oh, we're going to be stricter than Prabhupada. And that's also mental speculation. So, you know, this mental speculation also can apply to practice if one is not very, very careful in the application of Krishna consciousness. So we have to avoid, the whole point of the class is avoid mental speculation. And it's not always so easy to understand what is mental speculation versus philosophical speculation. But philosophical speculation should be accepted by intelligent people. And if you're experiencing some doubt, you should reveal your mind to someone who knows how to adjust things or explain things properly. and associate with the devotee. Another point is that if one doesn't regularly associate with other devotees and ready to take feedback from other devotees, one's philosophical speculation may degrade into mental speculation. Very, very important, because one can think, you know, you have to make this adjustment or that adjustment, but then you have to be really careful. That's why we have the Association of Devotees, who are like many sticks that keep the stick, any one stick, from being broken. So anyway, so that's all I wanted to say today. So, yes, Tristan Prue.
If you look in the purport, I thought it was interesting what Prabhupada said, how he stated it, you know, he said, you know, it's very surprising that the moon, as the modern surgeons, the moon could be possible, since the moon is so distant, how could space be able to go there without the mystery? Then he says, modern scientific calculations are such as one step another,
yeah,
and therefore uncertain.
Yeah.
The basic. I think he's really establishing a point there, and he's nuanced. He says, not that we didn't know it, it's doubtful.
Yeah.
But the modern scientists are changing all the time.
Exactly.
So the principle is that we want to stick with something that's inerrant, and that's basic. I mean, I think that's a philosophical point.
Mm-hmm.
Rather than something that, 100 years from now, they're going to say, gee, they thought that once, didn't they?
Exactly. I mean, just like Newtonian physics. You know, that people thought that was the absolute truth. But before that, they had some other sort of theories. And then Einstein came along. And now Einstein, you know, there's so many faults and flaws in Einstein's doctrines too, theories too. And then, you know, they're changing theory. I remember there was one interesting, scientist who said, and this is like in the 1970s, he said, we have just come up with this new theory, and he said something like, don't worry, so it's so different from other theories, because basically we're going to come up with another theory in the future. At least it was honest. It was honest about the whole thing. It was actually in the newspaper. He said, you know, this is... He was actually saying that these theories are not... Even nowadays, actually, if you talk to a scientist, a physicist, he will admit that. Because every time they explore further in the subatomic realm, they discover their previous theories had some flaws to them. So they'll admit that. I mean, they'll actually admit it at this particular point. And they don't even understand, like you're talking about gravity, they don't understand what gravity is. They talk about different forces, primary forces in the universe, like what's called the weak, the strong, gravity, and electromagnetism. And they don't even know what they are. You know, they can manipulate them to a certain extent, but their theories about what they are or where they came from, they'll admit. I mean, an honest scientist will admit, you know, we don't know what gravity is. What is it? And Prabhupada explained next chapter that gravity is actually manipulation of the light bearers in a subtle way in the universe, which is interesting. All right, thank you. Any other questions or comments? Yeah. Much better. We don't want someone who's just like killing all men, women, and children. And, you know, some devotees speculate maybe that was about a demigod. I'm not qualified to speculate on that because I don't know what's authentic or what's not authentic in the Bible, what's been added later on. You know, that's beyond my ability to have some help in the simple succession. But certainly, you don't want to worship a god who just kills men, women, and children without reason. It's a child abuser. Jai Radhakalakananda.